in 86. Anna Martin wrote the first book of what became a cult. Now it's time for Babysitter's Club.
Hey, babe.
Don't.
Talking
don't
to you now.
Hi, hi.
Yeah. Hi, hi.
Hi, hi.
I'm surprised none of our baby boys or baby girls or baby people have sent in any submissions for our Hi Hi Jamie t-shirt contest.
I think it probably takes a long time to make something awesome like that, and they're just taking their time. So this is a message to all of you out there in Baby Nation.
Yes.
What we want is a t-shirt that has Jamie Newton on it saying Hi Hi.
Which is the Baby Nation.
Oh, God, that sounds so good.
Yeah, I feel good about that.
Hi, hi.
Hi, hi.
Welcome to the Babysitter's Club Club. My name is Jack Shepherd.
My name is Tanner Greenring.
And this is a podcast that you listen to about the Babysitter's Club by Anna Martin.
You've presumably, I assume at this point, have listened to it 7 times already.
Well,
why
there's
would you
no
hop in at 8?
This is episode 8. Maybe you're just taking a dip in the water. Maybe Boy Crazy Stacy is your very favorite Babysitter's Club book, which it may be mine.
I'm really glad, before we begin, before you do your hilarious intro.
Great, good.
About how dumb I am.
Uh-huh.
I'm really glad I read these books on a Kindle, because I read the majority of this book on the New York City subway system, and if I, a 6'5", 32-year-old man...
Hulk of a man...
I know all you podcast listeners, what you hear is my nasally voice, but I'm actually a huge man.
Yeah.
I'm 6'4". I weigh 220 pounds. I'm a big guy.
Yeah, it's
built like
weird...
a linebacker. It's Minnesota bloodlines, that Nordic blood surging through me. If I had been seen holding a book, a 120-page book called Boy Crazy Stacy, I'm pretty sure I would have been run right off that subway.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the context of this book, for those who have read it, Tanner sounds like an Alex, but he looks like a Scott.
Ooh. That's the nicest thing you've ever said about
me. He sounds like a nerdy, know-nothing, useless square of an Alex, but he looks like a hunky, large beefcake.
Beefcake.
Of a Scott.
Yep. Let's get into it, man. Do your intro.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about why we're doing this real quick for those who are actually just dipping in. As a young man, I read all of these books. I had a cousin who was a good friend of mine. She liked these books. She introduced them to me. I read all of them.
Man, your cousin put you on blast on Facebook this week.
I know.
You shared our latest app, and she was like, why don't I ever get a hat tip? And it was like, hey, dog, you get a hat tip at the top of literally every single episode.
No, that's a true point. Yeah. So she put me on blast. It was clear she hadn't listened necessarily.
Yeah.
But also, she deserves a hat tip. Here it is again, to my cousin who introduced me to these books.
Tanner. What's her first name?
Pip. Pip Silverwood, short for Philippa.
Oh, that's your mom's name.
I guess now my cousin, now you can find her.
Oh. Sorry, Pip. You got the whole Baby Nation coming after you now.
Oh, that was good. You say that so well.
Yeah, it feels good.
Why are you reading these books, Tanner?
The reason I read these books,
yeah,
is because somewhere deep inside of me,
mm-hmm,
exists a scared, mm-hmm, 13-year-old girl.
A boy crazy, possibly 13-year-old girl.
Oh, the boy craziest.
The boy craziest. I think we're going to talk a lot about boy craziness today. And that's something that's a big theme of this novel. I want to start by saying what I think this novel is about. And then we're going to do a little segment that we have come to enjoy where Tanner describes the entire plot in 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my kind of brief summation of it. And you can tell me whether you think this is right. On a trip to the beach with a close friend, a young woman from New York becomes gradually more and more unstable as she falls under the influence of a mysterious lifeguard named Scott. And the question confronting us in this book is, will Scott succeed in completely unraveling her fragile mind? Or can Stacy be turned aside from her breakneck path towards boy craziness and ruin? What do you think?
Time me.
You're ready. You're ready.
As usual, yours is bullshit nonsense.
Okay.
And there's a very concise plot that can be laid out in 60 seconds.
In 60 seconds.
Yep.
All right, let's go now.
Stacy McGill, Marianne something. They're mommy's helpers for the Pikes. Pikes have lots of kids. I don't remember how many. 9, maybe. They go to Sea City, New Jersey. Hey, BT Dubs, not a real place, just like Stony Brook, another fictional town ripped out of fantasy world. They take care of the Pike kids as the parents try to enjoy their vacation. They're on the Jersey Shore. They're right by the beach. Stacy falls in love with a boy named Scott. He's a hunk. He always wears something called nose. What was it called? Nose dip? Something. I think it's like sunscreen. I don't know.
15 seconds left.
She falls in love with him. He's a jerk. He calls her babe and like princess a lot. Marianne falls in love with a boy named Alex. Stacy eventually realizes that Scott's not right for her, falls in love with a boy named Toby. They go on a double date and they kiss in the tunnel of love. And then they go home back to Stony Brook, Connecticut.
It's over.
Oh. Yes.
Wow, that was good.
I got it all, yeah?
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's actually a pretty accurate summation. You left out everything that happens to Marianne.
No, I said Marianne falls in love with a boy named Alex.
Oh, God, that's barely scratching the surface of what happens to Marianne.
They really, like, commit to one another, too. They buy one another, like, promise rings.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the central tension of this book is between entropy, between chaos.
God damn it.
And order and rules.
Uh-huh.
Between people who...
I feel like our second branding opportunity after Jamie Hi-Hi Shirts is Exhausted Tanner. Uh-huh. Saying,
no, this is important. I think this is real. I think that the central tension of this book is between chaos and order, between boy craziness and boy sensibleness.
Okay.
And we've got two women who take very, very different paths.
Right.
Ultimately to the same ending, but Marianne is ultimately very, very boy sensible. And I think that speaks well of her, and it also works out better for her. Stacey makes some fucking mistakes.
I'd be interested to see this narrative from the perspective of Marianne.
Right.
Because you say she's boy sensible because we only get it from Stacey's point of view, who is titularly boy crazy.
She's boy crazy.
Man, she is boy crazy.
Yeah.
This dude, Scott, this like cool 18-year-old lifeguard, just treats her like a fucking pile of shit.
I wrote down some stuff that Scott, his name is Scott Foley. The first thing out of his mouth is, hey, cutie.
Yeah.
The second thing out of his mouth is, maybe we better introduce ourselves. I'm Scott. Scott Foley. I've been noticing you.
Ooh. Ooh.
Which I would be into if somebody said that to me. If a hunky lifeguard or lifeguardess said that to me, I'd be pretty psyched about it.
Right.
Looking at it from where I am at.
Yeah.
A 30-something-year-old man, 25 years later.
Yeah.
He's 18.
Yeah, he's a predator.
And she's 12.
Yeah, 13.
13. Sorry.
She's predator.
She's 13. Oh, and she says that. She responds awesomely. I'm Stacy McGill, 13 years old, formerly of New York City.
I'm in over my head.
I like formerly of New York City, which is like, Stacy, fucking get over it.
I had a similar thought to you.
Yeah.
I'm a as discussed, 32-year-old, 6'5". Hulk of a man.
Mm-hmm.
But in reading these books, I do the normal human thing and project myself onto the character whose perspective I'm reading through. And this week it happened to be a 13-year-old, slight diabetic girl named Stacy McGill.
As it is every 4 weeks.
But in the process of reading through this, I was trying to separate myself from her a little bit, but I couldn't. So every time I pictured her walking down the beach, I saw my 6'5". 32-year-old self walking down the beach. So you imagine how put off I was when a handsome, hunky 18-year-old man from the lifeguard stand looks up at me and says, hey there, princess.
Yeah. I did the opposite thing. I put myself in the lifeguard's perspective.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the sane and normal thing to do for a well-adjusted, heterosexual man.
Yeah. I imagine myself being it. Because, you know, we've all been on beach vacations.
Yeah.
And had a summer romance?
Nope. Not me, man. Well, too much of a nerd growing up.
Or speculated about what it might be like to have a summer romance?
Played a lot of, sat on the beach, played a lot of Pokemon Crystal on my Game Boy Advance.
Oh, man, you know who would have lapped that right up?
Oh, fucking Marianne probably.
Marianne Spear would have been like, Sorry to bother you, but...
Which starter did you choose? Torchic? Cool.
Yeah. So, Scott...
Wait, you and I are grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
We're both married.
Yeah.
To women.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, we're going to have kids.
Mm.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one piece of advice I'm going to give my young son is... it's a piece of advice I wish my dad had given me. Is you're a boy, you're full of hormones, you're gonna be awful to women. You don't need to be. And the easiest way to not be is to treat every woman as if they're a 32-year-old, 6'4" hulk of a man. Because if I was walking down the beach and Scott the lifeguard was at his lifeguard stand and he saw me coming and said, "Hey, princess," I would shoot him the saltiest look.
But Stacy loved it, man.
It was a different time, man. It was 1986. I feel like we've really matured as a nation now. And, we can't just go around, catcalling 13-year-old girls and calling them princess and babe and shit, you know?
And I'm so pleased about that.
Especially when you're not a 19-year-old man who's about to go to college.
It's weird. And the justification in this book is that, Scott's not really into her. At some point... Stacy falls head over heels for this guy and goes and tries to buy him presents and stuff, and she writes Stacy plus Scott equals love in the sand. She just comes on super strong.
No, he's a super villain. He's got a whole army of teen girls to do his bidding. They just go and fetch him pops and make him sandwiches.
And he splits it with his other lifeguards. He's always like, "Hey, princess,
Bruce.
I've been thinking about you. You're looking great today. Hey, would you like to get me a soda?" And Stacy's like, "Can I get you a soda? Are you kidding me?" It's not a good look for Scott. And I think that'll come back to bite him eventually.
Every time Scott said something, I took a note and just did the emoticon that is a colon and then a slash to be like,
"What are you doing, dude? Just let it go, man." Though Scott has a girlfriend, and who's his age,
right? And she's curvy.
Yeah, the way you're saying that sounds like you're interpolating that, but it is stated in the text.
No, it's stated she's curvy.
She's curvy, and they're gorgeous, making out on the bench.
That's
and
what Stacy says.
Marianne and Stacy discover it right after Stacy has spent all of her allowance on Stacy, if you're listening to this, you're coming on way too strong. Two ideas that you had that I hated. One, getting a t-shirt that has Stacy plus Scott equals love, spelt L-U-V on it, made. After you met this guy a couple times and he called you princess. Even, setting aside the weird age difference.
Yeah.
Even if that's on, you like this guy, he likes you. Don't get a t-shirt made that says... your name and his name plus love spelled wrong.
Did we cover on the podcast a few weeks ago when I was here and your wife came in with a box full of, what did it say? Jack. It said, "I heart Jack and Sarah."
T-shirts
and hats.
And hats.
And your wife handed me one of each. and I still proudly wear both when I go to the gym.
I actually didn't realize
they were left over from your wedding. I think Sarah's dad may have made them for you guys.
Yeah.
very handsome shirt. And if wearing a confession of love is wrong, I want to be right.
Yeah. I'm going to take that whole thing back. I wish I had thought about that for one second. I literally have done that.
Yeah.
I have been part of making a t-shirt that declares my love.
Yeah, it's not even your love. It says, "I heart Jack and Sarah."
Yeah.
So it's not even you declaring your own love for your wife, which is perfectly normal. You married her.
Yeah.
It's you forcing
other people. Well, that kind of makes sense. Yeah. But so anyway, the second thing that Stacy does that, fortunately, she's pulled back from the brink is she goes to buy him a gift. And the gift she buys him is somehow it's a Valentine's heart full of chocolates, which is again, they haven't even held hands at this point. And fortunately, at the moment that she buys it, she and Marianne see Scott making out with this curvy lady who's age appropriate.
Right.
And that sets Stacy back for 25 seconds, and then she falls in love with Toby.
Toby sounds like the coolest dude in the world. Do you want to hear how he's described the first time she sees him?
Yeah.
He was wearing plain white swimming trunks, but his shirt was amazing. Tan, with silly pictures of cowboy boots and cactuses all over it.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And his sunglasses, black bands with narrow slits from side to side to see through. Totally cool.
Yeah! He was wearing Kanye West sunglasses.
Yeah, that sounds cool as hell, man.
25 years before Kanye West made them popular.
I didn't know that was a thing. Oh, shit. Oh, shit, dude. Do you think Kanye West is just reading babysitter's books and, like, mining them for, like, modern fashion ideas?
God, that makes so
much
sense.
Oh, shit. I'm going to start tracking that, man. I'm going to start tracking what Claudia and Stacey are wearing in every book. And, like, Google image searching Kanye West and just seeing if it matches up.
Yeah. A thing that Stacey and Claudia have definitely signaled as being cool is whenever someone wears an oversized t-shirt.
Yeah.
They
oh,
say that's
shit,
cool.
Man.
Is that something Kanye does?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he's got a whole line of t-shirts that's, like, big, oversized t-shirts.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, man.
This is actually big. Like,
I'm
going
to blow the fucking lid wide off this thing.
Oh,
I'm going to go to Twitter tonight.
Yeah.
After a few more beers, I'm going to go to Twitter tonight and be like, hey, Kanye, I'm calling you out, man.
I know what's happening. You're not the only 30-something-year-old dude who's poring over the Babysitter's Club books for life and fashion advice.
Tomorrow, let's go to Dash. Let's go to his wife's shop in Soho, New York.
Yeah.
With our Kindles in hand.
Oh, man.
And just see what's up.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right, I'm into it. What do you want to talk about next? I got a few things. We haven't really scratched the surface of boy craziness.
Yeah, we started to get into it a little bit, but Stacy's not the only boy crazy Stacy in this book.
Okay, who else is a boy crazy Stacy?
Marianne.
I strongly disagree.
She's not boy crazy. She's boy sensible, but she is... No, she's a little boy crazy.
She's 100% boy sensible. Sure, she's titillated when she kisses Alex in the fucking tunnel
him.
Of love.
Don't you dare.
She kisses him.
She is a prudent young woman. They do not kiss. It is never stated that they kiss. What they do is exchange promise rings with their initials on one another.
What do you think is more significant in a relationship? A light kiss? A little bit of light kissing? Literally engraving your initials on a ring and giving it to somebody?
They kiss in a tunnel of love, man.
Yeah.
That's like real.
Yeah, that's pretty real.
Toby was 14. He was going to be a freshman in high school. Pretty cool. He played soccer and football. Really cool. His hobby was computers. Less cool, but, you know, well-rounded.
No, I like that. I thought that gave him a little bit of an edge.
His favorite group was Smash. I didn't know what that meant.
I looked him up. They were an Indonesian rock band.
No, I don't think that's it. Do you think she means the, like, off-Broadway trash, like, garbage percussion group? Were they called Smash?
I don't know, man. Maybe it's just some Jersey band.
Stomp is the name of the off-Broadway.
Oh, wow, you were so far off.
That's not that far off.
same first letter. Here's the thing that Marianne says that kind of signals that she's not necessarily as boy crazy as Stacy. And this is Marianne talking about how she's kind of starting to develop feelings for Alex. Marianne says, but I never liked one before. I've always been sort of afraid of them. And then she says, then I'm glad you met Alex. I'm glad he helped change your mind about boys. They're not alien creatures, you know. Why would she clarify that? Why would Stacy clarify that?
I think it probably took me until the age of 14 or 15 to realize that girls were not terrifying alien creatures. I know it comes naturally to like a born extrovert. Cool guy like you, Jack Shepard, but I think for the Mariannes and the Tanners of the world, like, it can be a little difficult, man.
Would you agree that it's fair to say that I'm a Scott, but I look like an Alex, and you're an Alex, but you look like a Scott?
I think that's very generous on your part. And also, like, I think you're more like a Scott who looks like a Toby. You're not a man who looks like a nerd.
Yeah.
You're a man who looks like a well-adjusted 42-year-old man.
So a good deal older than I actually am.
Yeah, well.
But well-adjusted?
Yeah. That's like sort of a normal,
like,
dad-aged man.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me. I got a few more things that I kind of want to talk about. I mean, this is like, obviously, this is the first epistolary novel in the Babysitter's series.
Here's something that was refreshing.
Yeah.
Speaking of how boy crazy Stacy is, here's one reason why she's not boy crazy at all.
Okay.
She was trying to get Marianne to go and ask Alex and Toby out on a double date.
Yeah, she and Toby had already secured a date.
Yeah.
And she told Marianne to go ask Alex, who is Toby's cousin, if he wanted to come along as well.
Right. And Marianne said, no, gross. Girls don't ask boys out on dates.
Oh, yeah.
And Stacy said, oh, Marianne, that is so old-fashioned.
Yeah. That was cool.
So she's not boy crazy, man. She's a like progressive young woman who's like making her own way in the world, you know?
Yeah, no, that was
taking
awesome.
Charge.
I like that a
smashing
lot.
Smashing those barriers.
Yeah. Did you notice the parallels with the yellow wallpaper?
Oh, wow. Because they stay in a room that has yellow wallpaper.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's good.
So
is actually one of your like dumb academic references that I actually know for once.
Yeah. Okay, good. Charlotte Perkins Gilman.
Yeah. It's a story. It's an old British story of an oppressed woman who is locked in her bedroom, which has yellow wallpaper, and she slowly, over the course of this short story, like unravels and goes insane.
Yeah, that's roughly what it is. I think it's not British. I think it's American, and I think that she's not locked in the room. She's kind of kept there as a part of this rest cure where her husband is like, you're hysterical. Like, just hang out in your room and don't read any books and don't do anything and, like, let the patriarchy just wash over
obsess
you.
Obsess with the yeah. yellow wallpaper.
So the reason that we're talking about this is the following quote, which I wrote down. As Marianne and Stacy walk into the holiday home, they say, this is the yellow bedroom. If you don't like it, there are a couple rooms on the third floor you could trade. Oh, no, it's perfect, Marianne breathed. Just perfect. It was a pretty room, I suppose, says Stacy, although not really to my taste. It was old-fashioned, with two dark wood beds, a bare wood floor, and yellow flowered wallpaper. Why would you call that out? Like, that is like one of the great...
I can't
the great short stories.
Until Anna Martin is on this podcast,
yeah.
And we can just confront her with all of this.
I mean, there's no question this is there. It is about a woman who is slowly going crazy. And
yeah.
That is what the trajectory of this novel is. Stacy starts out a good babysitter. She ends up a terrible babysitter.
She has a
but
dark journey.
There's an all is lost moment where she has gone totally boy crazy. It's about this girl who, through systematic oppression, her parents are completely domineering. They're holding her back because of this diabetes. They're like looking over everything she does. She can barely get the trip approved to go to Sea City because her parents are just overbearing.
Yeah.
And she just wants to let loose. Stacy just wants to be free. And here she comes to this new place where a new form of oppression takes over and slowly drives her crazy. She gets completely
boys?
Crazy. It's boys. I'll tell you something. Toby is our age now.
Yeah.
I would hang out with that dude.
You think so?
I would go get a beer with him.
He's into computers.
He's into computers.
Soccer.
He's into the like hit like punk underground punk band Smash.
Or Malaysian.
Or the Indonesian boy band Smash. Unclear.
Or the hit 2011 NBC drama Smash.
Anyway, he has interests.
Yeah.
We could hang out with that dude. But literally within a day of turning Scott aside, you know what she writes in the sand?
Stacy
plus
Toby equals love.
Yeah, L-U-V.
Yeah.
Do you think love is just spelled wrong in the N.M. Martin verse?
Maybe it's an acronym.
It stands for something?
I want to hear what you think it might stand for.
Law of universal variation.
Okay.
And that actually fits with my theme, which is that this book is very much about yin and yang. It's very much about, you know, entropy is important, right? Like, entropy needs to happen for the world to, like, continue to flow. Otherwise, we'd just be in stasis. So entropy is part of what keeps the world going. And this is very much a book of dichotomies. It's boy craziness, boy sensibleness.
Keep talking.
Okay. It's lifeguards who are supposed to keep you safe.
The lifeguards never don't do their jobs.
I think that the lifeguards are there as a representation of order. And then the Pikes are there as a representation of chaos. Here's a quote from the Pikes. Mrs. Pike says, "As you know, Mr. Pike and I don't believe in making rules for the children or forcing them to do things they don't want to do."
That's a terrible idea when you have ten kids. That's an awful idea. All you need is order.
And the only – I want to just bring this point home, and this is something that I'm sure you noticed, which is the romantic versus the Victorian sensibility in this.
Okay.
Which to me is –
I can hang with you on this.
Yeah. So there's a point
where – I minored in English literature in college. You know that?
I did not know that. It doesn't show.
That's absolutely true. Minored in English literature, and my favorite era was the Romantic era.
Good man. Okay, well, here's just a real quick one that kind of brings this particular point home. Vanessa, who's one of the Pikes.
Yep.
She is, I think, 6 or 7 years old.
Yep, poet.
And she's a poet. She says everything in rhyme. You know what they all call her? Kind of weirdly.
No, I didn't pay attention.
Their pet name for her is E.B. Browning.
No, that's no.
I swear to God, it's in the book.
No, it's absolutely not.
I swear to you that
if
it's
I do
in the
a
book.
Search of the text right now for E.B. Browning,
search Browning and look in the text, and then I'll try to fill while we talk about this because
this
the point
book.
That I'm making, as usual, isn't really going anywhere except to say that guess what? Another one of the kids is named
Byron.
Byron.
I saw that. I picked that up.
Yeah. Literally, the Victorian era and the Romantic era.
Man, I can't wait to confront Anne M. Martin.
It's just too obvious to not be real. This is Victorian era is synonymous with control and order and repression and boy sensibleness. Romantic era, in particular, Byron is notorious for passion and letting it all hang out. And in Byron's case as well, boy craziness. It's just right there.
Oh, yep. They're at a Jersey Shore burger establishment that is themed like a sort of an Alice in Wonderland English garden, 6-foot rabbits, mushroom stools kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
They're all trying to decide who's going to sit together. No one wants to sit with Vanessa because she's so irritating because she's always rhyming.
I love Vanessa, but yeah.
And Nikki says, "I don't want to eat with Elizabeth Barrett Browning," which is pretty good for
like
a 7-year-old boy.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so badass. So
and then
why
Marianne says, "A very good poet." So.
There you go.
A huge celebration of romantic literature and poetry in this book.
I noticed that. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. It's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game, June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's Journey, a game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner.
Do you want to talk about B-theory here?
Do you mean my theory?
Your theory.
That
stated in episode, I'm going to say 5 of this very podcast.
I don't think it was 5. I think we were in Berlin for 5. I think it was maybe 6.
Okay. Well, let's not fret about the numbers. But you said something that struck me, that struck a nerve with me.
My theory is that Stony Brook, Connecticut, a fictional place in a non-fictional world, is not a town at all, but a beehive. And that its residents and all the young people and all these babysitters are actually bees.
And there's a reason for that. The reason this theory is worth entertaining is because although these books center on the idea of a babysitter's club, it still doesn't make sense how much everybody in the town, from grown-ups to siblings to the actual babysitters themselves, and like other people in the school, are completely obsessed with the idea of babysitting.
Right.
Which to me now, thanks to you enlightening me on this, sounds like something that makes more sense for a colony of bees,
yeah,
than it does for a small town in Connecticut.
I want to put a small disclaimer on my bee theory.
Okay.
I don't know anything about bees.
Okay.
I don't know
yeah,
whether bees have like a big like caring for their young instinct. Have you ever seen a baby bee?
No, but it sounds like it would be cute.
Is it like a larva?
God, I don't know.
Now I have to go and wait.
No,
we
can't.
Baby.
Can I talk while bee. You Google? Can I tell you? Are you going to be able to listen to me while you Google
baby
something?
Baby Beethoven.
Let me tell you something about bees, Tanner.
Yeah. Larval bees?
I need your full attention.
Bees, larval stage. Here we go.
No, I think that's going to be gross.
Oh. No, it's cute.
Is it?
Well, sort of. So you know honeycombs?
Mm-hmm.
That like bees do?
Mm-hmm.
They squirt little maggots.
That's not cute. That's not cute. I think squirt is a giveaway.
They like poop little maggots into the... Look at this. Look at this picture.
Oh, that is cute.
Little honeycombs, and there's little curled up...
Oh, they squirt little maggot bees into the honeycombs.
Little maggot bees into the little honeycombs. That's kind of cool. It's kind of nice.
I think what you might be describing are queen cups.
Okay.
When the hive gets ready to swarm, the queen lays eggs into the queen cups. And so they raise new queen bees so they can do a process that is called swarming, which is when a new honeybee colony is formed when the queen bee leaves the colony with a large group of worker bees. Does that sound at all familiar to you? Like they do a little tester. Bees will take a little test, like a little test group of bees.
For instance, they take a little test group of bees from their hive in Stony Brook, Connecticut.
Let's say.
A fictional town.
For instance.
/hive. Sea City.
Mm-hmm.
New Jersey. Another town that somehow doesn't show up on any human maps.
No.
But it's not to say it doesn't show up on bee maps.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to confront Kanye about this, too.
Yeah, I think Kanye would be into it.
I'm just going to tweet blast him.
Yeah.
It's going to be hundreds of tweets. And it's going to start like... Kanye, I finally figured it out. You're getting all your inspiration from Claudia Kishi. Also, let's get into bee theory, man. Like, all of these girls are tester queen bees, and they're spreading their colonies across the Atlantic seaboard. Let's get into it, man. What do you think?
I feel like Kanye wouldn't skip a beat with something like that.
No, he would pick up right where I left off.
And you know what else Kanye would say?
What?
He would be like, yeah, I read book 8. Of the Babysitter's Club.
Boy Crazy Stacy.
Boy Crazy Stacy.
Yeah.
And a thing that I noticed that supports the beehive theory of moving a hive to a new place is that all of the babysitters...
You did your research.
Yeah. This is me as Kanye right now. Uh-huh. But all of the babysitters, right before they leave to go to Sea City, they all like burst into floods of tears.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask if
they
that was your tearful moment.
Fucking lose their minds. No, this isn't tearful.
Did you have
moment.
A tearful moment?
Yeah, I had a tearful moment.
Okay, let's get into it in a second. Finish your point.
You know how Marianne is like, oh, boys are aliens? This was a moment for me where I was trying to put myself in the mind frame of a 13-year-old, and I was just like Girls are aliens. Here's the line. We all began hugging each other. Christy handed out tissues. As soon as we'd calmed down, Dawn moaned. 2 whole weeks. And then the hugging and the crying started again. That's, you're 13, you're hanging out with 3 of your friends.
Yeah.
And 2 of them are going away for spring break.
Mm-hmm.
Is it likely or even feasible that you would all, like, fucking lose your minds crying about it?
When I was 13.
Yeah.
As previously stated.
Yeah.
I had one interest.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. We know it.
And it was finding a quiet spot to just crank that hog.
Yep. And cry?
Sometimes.
Yeah. All right.
So if I was hanging out with my buds and they're like, hey, man, we're going to take off for 2 weeks. We're going to Sea City, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, great, man. I got to run.
Yeah.
I got things to do.
I got a lot of cranking and weeping.
I got things to crank.
Yeah.
So see you in 2 weeks, man.
So you wouldn't cry and hug necessarily. No. So why would you weep uncontrollably if somebody's just going away for a couple weeks?
Man.
Unless they're running off to start a new hive, man.
This is your broken British sensibilities showing through.
Okay.
Your emotionless, robot-like British sensibilities.
I think it's probably not going to be clear for the listeners of this podcast that I'm actually a British
man. Oh, yeah,
man.
You're British. Do your British accent.
I can't.
Do it to me.
All right.
No, don't just say one word. That doesn't prove it. Here's the thing, listeners. Jack doesn't like to admit it, but Jack is secretly British. Yeah. He grew up in England.
Yeah.
He went to university
in
Scotland. Moved here as a kid. Felt like a regular mean Janine and felt the need to adapt to American culture.
Uh-huh.
So has taken on this American accent. Totally fake.
It's perfect.
It's perfect, but it's fake. And inside of you is a British man. And every time you talk to someone you love, which includes your wife.
Uh-huh. Well.
It includes your wife, but maybe the British doesn't come out for her that often.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents and your cat and your brother. I've witnessed it in front of your brother, too.
Mm-hmm.
You drop into your actual human man accent, which is a thick Londoner.
No, my accent that I have when I speak with my parents is completely generic.
Well,
it can't be pinned to a particular location.
London is the only location in England, Jack.
Yeah.
That was Jack's secret British accent that he actually has because he's a secret British man. I grew up in Minnesota, as previously stated in this very episode.
Yeah.
Rich farmer blood.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I would go and visit my grandparents with my family growing up, we would go for a week or two at a time. And every time we left, the entirety of the Putney clan, which is my mother's maiden name, would uncontrollably sob.
Wait, really?
For 30 minutes. 30 minutes leading up to me and my mom and my dad and my sister leaving Minnesota would just be uncontrollable sobbing.
So wait, you're saying that you're bees?
I'm saying we're good, hearty, Midwestern stock bees. And you know what? They're dying out. So you know what? We need more of that. We need more of that right now because the bees are dying out.
Wow. Well, that's okay. Well, that's it for bee theory.
Oh, man. I'm really glad we blew the lid off of your secret Britishness this episode.
You can't cut it. I don't.
I'm going to edit this episode.
No,
so
I'm editing this episode.
Because you've edited it.
Because I have edited all the episodes. I'll try to keep it in.
Keep it in.
All right.
People are going to eat that up.
Let me ask you a question, Tanner.
Hit me.
What was your tearful moment this week? Did you have one?
Absolutely. Did not have one.
I had one.
Did you?
Yeah. It got me good. And it came at me out of nowhere. It's early on. Marianne and her dad are saying goodbye to each other. Stacy and her dad say goodbye to each other. And Stacy's dad is like, Stacy, remember to take your insulin and, like, here's a peanut butter sandwich and, like, I'm annoying. And Stacy's like, ah, shut up, Dad.
Yeah.
And then she goes to Marianne's and here's the line. Marianne and I arrived at the Pikes early. My dad drove us over. If you think Mom and I had been tearful the day before, you should have seen Marianne and her father. It was like Niagara Falls for both of them. I've hardly ever seen a man cry.
That gotcha?
This is Marianne's dad, who is buttoned up. He's not a guy who expresses his emotions. Mm-hmm. He's a big shot in Stony Brook, weeping, just weeping at the idea of his daughter going away for a couple of weeks. You want to know why?
Because he misses his dead wife.
Thank you very much.
This visage of her that is his daughter.
Yeah.
Is the only replacement he has for the void left behind by his wife's death.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's getting me right now. I'm not even kidding. That's getting me right now. When Mr. Spear looks at Marianne, all he sees is his dead wife.
Yeah. Shit, you're thinking about your own wife dying.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I just think
I hope
that
Sarah never dies.
I think I identify with Marianne's dad. That's a real, that's like a real specific one. I feel like everybody thinks that they're a babysitter. It's like Sex and the City. Like everybody who grew up reading these books thinks of themselves as a babysitter.
Uh-huh.
I'm reading these books possibly at the wrong age.
Yeah.
And like who I am is Mr. Spear.
Yeah.
And there's just something there. It's like he's a guy who's normally
sad, single father.
Yeah. So I don't see myself in him in terms of like my actual situation, but I see myself in him in the way that he carries himself.
You know who I'm more like is a
in terms of dads.
Dads in the
N.M. Martin verse.
I guess maybe Stacy's dad because he's constantly worried, and I'm a worrier. I'll take it. I'll take Stacy's dad.
That's good. Yeah.
So we've reached the point in the evening where you and I are just trying to get through our notes, huh?
Yeah.
Let's get back to Barf.
Okay, fine.
Nikki is way into Barf.
Yeah.
He, Margot,
mm-hmm.
one of the least mentioned.
Yeah, barely touched upon.
Children.
Yeah.
Has a nausea problem. Used to it. My dad, growing up, could never sit in the back seat of a car because you would throw up. My current wife can't sit in the back seat of a car because she'll throw up. Margot has the same problem. They have a thing called the Pike puke bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Because Margot is so prone to throwing up. Nikki encourages her to drink grape soda before their road trip down
That's
to
so
Sea
cool.
City. Because he's going to, you know what? He's a practical dude. He's going to have to see Barf. And he wants it to be a show.
Yeah. He's awesome. I love Nikki so much.
So he encourages her to drink grape soda so that she will barf up foamy purple spew. At some point, so they have to take two different cars because there's so many Pike kids. Mrs. Pike and a number of the kids pass Mr. Pike and a number of the kids in the car, and they hold up a sign that says, Barfmobile.
Oh, this is awesome.
Because they know Margot is in the car with Stacy, ready to barf up that grape soda. And Nikki, quick on his wits, grabs a red crayon and paper and fires back at them, vomit comet.
Vomit comet, that's so cool. That's so fucking smooth on short notice.
Yeah, he's got that in the barrel.
Oh, that was awesome. That was so cool. That
sometimes,
was so
sometimes
awesome.
My cat barfs.
Yeah.
And my wife has to clean it up because one time I was trying to be a responsible adult man, and I went to go clean up my cat's barf, and just barfed all over the place. Like, it was hot, and it was wet, and I was trying to scoop it up, and I was like, oh, it's gone, and it was just, like, gone.
I think a lot of our listeners are barfing right now. I actually wrote down a lot of things that Nikki said, and I'm not going to go into all of them because we're really, really tipping the edge of how long it's appropriate
to
record.
Book 8 can be a double ep.
But Nikki is so cool. Here's one that just really stood out for me. I'm going to read it out. I claim the ball, cried Nikki. No me, yelled Margot. No me, yelled Claire. I, Stacy, from Stacy's point of view here, I grabbed the beach ball and sat on it. Guess what, I said. The beach ball is either everybody's or nobody's. Thank you, Stacy, said Mr. Pike. But it can't be everybody's, said Nikki. Then I guess it's nobody's, I replied. If it's nobody's, then I claim it, Nikki retorted gleefully.
That's good logic.
What a fantastic piece of rhetorical fireworks that was. That was just a stunning, like, he took.
Yeah, Nikki's running labs around these fools.
They're like, Nikki is like 7 years old, and he's just destroying these like plebeian, barely able to think lunatics who are just saying whatever comes into their fucking minds. And Nikki's just like ready. Like, think about vomit comet. Think about saying vomit comet when somebody says barfmobile, like, all right, do a rhyme for barf and then some kind of a vehicle. Go.
Let's see. Upchuck.
Upchuck truck?
Upchuck truck.
Upchuck truck. No. Upchuck truck is good. Upchuck, the upchuck truck.
Let's move on. We're not Nick. Hey, neither one of us are Nickies.
Neither
one of us are born Nickies.
We don't have that level of wordplay. Like,
I bet Nicky's like a real top like ECD copywriter right now.
Yeah.
I bet he's living in New York City and he's like one of the smartest ad minds in the world.
Yeah. He's killing it.
Speaking of where these characters are at now.
Yeah.
I know we're going a little long.
Yeah.
You think Stacy and Toby are still an item?
No.
Now as they're 35-year-old people?
No way.
You don't think so?
No fucking way, man.
That felt so real.
I felt it more with Marianne and Alex.
Oh, you think Marianne and Alex are still an item?
Well,
you think they got together, had kids young?
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of in the book, Logan likes Marianne. Logan pulls off a mask and reveals that he's actually Alex.
That's true?
No, it's not true. Logan likes Marianne is coming up and it's about Logan.
I don't want it, man.
Off the fucking radar.
I love Marianne and Alex
together. I love Marianne and Alex too. And like this is a good place to wrap up.
Yeah.
Like the difference between being boy crazy and being boy sensible
I like to think that I am boy sensible.
Yeah, I would think that you're boy sensible.
I think you are too.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
That means a lot. I think we're both Marianne's. Neither of us are like identify at all with Stacy.
Uh-huh.
We look at that yellow wallpaper and all we see is wallpaper.
Yeah.
There's nothing moving around behind that wallpaper.
No.
We're not gonna go boy crazy just because like some fucking lifeguard called us princess.
I would be so put off if a lifeguard called me princess.
You know what? If a lifeguard called me princess, I would be like, sir.
Yeah. Excuse me?
Sir, go back to looking out for sharks and making sure that the tide's coming in at the right time and keep your comments to yourself.
I'm flattered.
Yeah.
But I'm a married man.
Yeah, I'm a married man. I will go and grab you a soda.
Yeah.
I will, of course.
Can I grab you a pop?
Yeah. But that's the end of it.
I like that both of us, when we're pretending to be real men, adopt these real men like voices.
No nonsense.
Neither of us are actually real men. Let's wrap this goddamn episode.
Let's tie it up with a bow. This has been, ladies and gentlemen, Baby Nation. Can you say it? Baby Nation.
Baby Nation. That's good.
That sounded good.
I think so.
Yeah. Baby Nation, thanks for sitting through this one with us. This was a great book, Boy Crazy Stacy.
Oh my God, Episode Jack, 8. It's 9 o'clock.
Just try to stay cool, man.
You've got a 2.5-hour movie to watch.
We're going to watch a movie after this. Try to be cool for once in your fucking life. We're wrapping this up.
It's
we're going to watch
now, man.
We're going to watch a 2.5-hour movie together.
Made it 32 years without being cool.
I'm trying to get you there, man. Here's a true fact. Next episode is going to be episode 9. We're going to be reading a book called The Ghost at Dawn's House. It's going to be a Dawn POV, and it's going to have some fucking ghosts in it.
Man, it's about time we're back to Dawn. It's been like, I feel like it's been ages.
Dawn's back with a vengeance and with a haunting. I've been Jack Shepherd.
I've been Tanner Greenring.
And this has been episode number 8 of the Babysitter's Club. Claudia's wearing a bra now, and the way she talks, you'd think boys had just been invented.
In 86, Anna Martin wrote the first book of what became a cult. Now it's time to Babysitter's Club.
Man, it's going to be hard to edit us singing that to Scott's outro.
Yeah, especially since I need to cut about 40 minutes out of this episode. Okay, goodbye. Thank you very much.